Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
Never filtered, always fun.
Yeah, so now you start looking at, you know, south of the border. So San Jose, I think, is a nice fit.
Could Wouldn't you imagine that be
San Jose probably too?
I said that.
Noodles just got there first.
What, you said San Jose?
I said San Jose will be in there.
Did I say Rafalski?
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles McLennan, the O-Dog will be back momentarily, and Bobby Mack will be in studio later in the hour.
We
ahead
think.
Of game seven tonight. We think it'll be
Duthie
in studio. Yeah, Duthie's a busy guy. Like, I know he's got a lot of panels he's doing. He's always a wanted man on radio. He does his podcast, but I think he records those on Tuesdays, so that didn't factor into today. But we were hoping to get him in studio in the previous hour, but it didn't work out. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, not much we can do. We had an incident.
Yeah, it was an incident, right. We'll keep it under wraps, and we'll deal with it internally.
Exactly.
And we did catch up with Alex Anthopoulos, though. That was pretty cool to catch
really
up with
good.
Him.
And I thought he was a little more forthcoming than he has been with us prior interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, he told us what he could about the Bautista situation. Guerrero talked about a young player, and I liked it. I thought it was
well.
Terrific.
It was informative too. Like I don't remember that being a part of the conversation. I'm sure it was, and clearly it would have been reported, but I don't remember it freshly in my mind as as a guy who's constantly looking for content. But Anthopoulos pointed out that they gave Guerrero Jr. a big bonus, and that was it. They had to take a year off in terms of international signings.
Oh yeah,
but they were so committed to him, and obviously it was the right decision. They're like, penalize us all you want. We don't care about anybody else. We want to get Vladdy Guerrero Jr. because we believe he's going to be a superstar. And they signed him, I think, when he was 16. And he hasn't played in the majors yet, but he is on a path
he's
to
on
the
path,
majors.
Path
he's getting there.
Special, yeah.
Yeah, so that was cool to catch up with him. And George Karl will join us here in a moment, longtime NBA head coach. And a guy with a rare distinction. I believe the only guy in history to win the Coach of the Year and then be fired like a month later.
It could happen here.
We're waiting for something. Like, Masai came out, he did not say definitively one way or the other if Casey is coming back or if Casey is going. He said, we're evaluating.
Right.
I'm sure that's exactly what they're doing. I'm sure he has to step in front of the board at some point and explain to them what happened and explain to the board what is going to happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a reality of being the president of a team, is at some point your owners are going to come knocking and saying, hey, what happened there again? Because we were kind of banking on more than four home dates or five. I guess they got five.
Yeah, you have to answer on a lot of different levels and to people higher pay grades than you. And this is a business.
Guys that are looking to make the money.
Right.
Like, you are employed, so your money's guaranteed. These guys are looking to make more and more money.
And they've probably factored in, this is how things look. If things go well, we could do this. I don't think they anticipated a sweep from Cleveland.
No way. No way.
I don't think anywhere in their game plan as far as planning ahead, where they're like, we are only getting two home dates of LeBron.
I would think they were willing to guarantee at least a third, at least game five, but probably pencil in, get greedy, and say game seven, too. Or if you win the series, you move on, and it keeps growing and growing and growing. And
yeah,
that's the reality of being an owner. Is that's what you do. You look at it, you're like, all right, what's going on here? How many gates can we get? How many people can we get in the building? How much money can we make?
If I was an owner, I would always budget for worst case scenario.
So would I.
Because that way, anything else is gravy.
I'm with you on that. I'm conservative, like fiscally conservative when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Like, tell me the least amount of money I can make on this, because that's how I'm going to have to run my business. You're not running your business on, well, if this happens and this happens, that's how I can afford that. And I'm not suggesting they can't afford that. We'd be dealing with companies that are worth billions of dollars. It's more about, if you're going to make things happen, I would budget on the low end so that you're pleasantly surprised and you go on a run and you know, everyone everyone wins, technically.
But I guess that is also a way of keeping people on the hot seat or keeping people motivated. And by that, I mean the people I'm talking about are the executives for the teams.
Yeah.
You know, Shanahan, Masai. They're probably saying, hey, this is what we expect out of you, so that those guys are sweating a little bit.
But bonus structures, too. You hear about it all the time. If a company makes their quarter and has positive gains, the CEO gets
all get paid.
Yeah, gets a bonus, $1 million bonus for the CEO. That I guarantee you that happens in the sports world. So this may have cost Masai some money. It may have cost, you know,
well, MLSE some money. Yeah,
well, it costed MLSE lots of money.
Prospective money, anyway. Like, with the idea, like, obviously sports are sports. You could have got swept in the first round.
Right. But prospective money on many different levels. Things you don't have to bring into, I guess, related income. If you're the Leafs.
Like hockey-related revenue.
Exactly.
And basketball-related revenue.
And you don't tie that in for, you know, Maple Leaf Square.
Well, and to say nothing of the residual businesses that also factor in, right, that feed off the trough.
Now, real sports and
exactly,
all that.
You know, and the amount of jerseys that get sold because people are in your building and all that kind of stuff. And furthermore, even though it doesn't directly affect their pockets at MLSE, but all the restaurants around there,
yeah,
you know, like bars and restaurants, man, they were making a fortune when the Leafs were playing and when the Raptors were playing playoff games.
For
people
sure.
are showing up to watch that kind of stuff.
Well, people want to make a night of it. So it helps for the restaurants, helps for the bars, and the whole city gets excited as well.
Absolutely. All right, this is going to be really cool. We've been trying to track him down for a while, and he's an all-time great coach, longtime NBA head coach, former NBA Coach of the Year back in 2013.
Yep.
Joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is George Karl. How you doing, George?
My life is good. My life is easy. It's you know, I'm not sure I like to be retired, but you know, there are days retire is pretty much fun, but there are days I miss the game a lot too. This is the time of the year that I probably miss the game more than I have feel comfortable being retired though.
Yeah, I was gonna say in September you're probably like, whatever, I'm cool with being retired, right?
Well, I miss the gym. I miss what I call my basketball family. You know, I mean, it's an incredible experience to coach in the NBA. There's only 30 NBA coaches, and I was blessed to do it for many, many years. And you know, I mean, there's probably a big part of me that still would like to do it again, but also realize that they're not hiring 66-year-old guys.
Well, they should hire you. But if I had to ask one question as far as one thing you miss the most, what would it be? I know people say, you know, the paycheck or the lifestyle and stuff. Is there one particular thing you could put your thumb on as to what you miss about coaching the most?
Probably the competition of a head coach going against another head coach and with great talent, with the best referees in the world. You know, it's a chess game. It's a match of your talented team versus their talented team. And, you know, pushing the buttons and making the decisions and hopefully, you know, doing it more often successfully than in failure. I mean, people forget that a coach that wins 60% of the games in the NBA is probably a Hall of Fame coach. And, it's not a perfect science. And, you know, some coaches do incredible jobs, but I think every year the 30 NBA coaches are pretty damn good coaches overall. And, unfortunately, we win in a produce for me now business and a win-lose business, and some of them get fired along the way.
Well, I mean, the old saying in coaching is you get hired to get fired. It's just a matter of time. Do you always feel it coming? Have you ever been shocked by a firing?
Oh, I think the last one was the most shocking. I mean, my one in Seattle was, you know, there was a conflict between myself and the organization, and you know, we had a great year and my contract was up and, you know, it didn't make sense to them and it didn't make sense to me to kind of try to compromise and figure it out. But the one when I was coach of the year in Denver and, the front office decided to change directions, I have no idea exactly what the reason they stated was, you know, losing in the first round of the playoffs or not, you know, being a great playoff team, making the playoffs, I think, all 8 or 9 years I was here in Denver, but not being successful in the playoffs. But, you know, I think 6 of those 9 years we lost to the NBA champions in the first round. So I could rationalize either one way or another, but I think this is the greatest basketball right now played in the world. The NBA playoffs, the quarterfinals just got done. Now we have the Final Four of the NBA. And you're going to have some incredible basketball games. You're going to see some incredible players step forward. LeBron has obviously already stepped forward in this playoff series, but there'll be someone else. I mean, it'll be a team. It'll be someone like Harden, or will Steph come back to the limelight, or Draymond Green, or a couple of years ago you had Iguodala win the MVP of the NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's an impressive time of the year of competition. The heart of the competitor, the head of the competitor, the teamwork and unselfishness of teams who got to fight through a lot of difficulty, and it's a lot of fun to watch. It's even a greater honor to be a part of.
With longtime NBA head coach George Karl, and you just detailed that story back in 2013 when you were named the NBA's head coach of the year in Denver, and then about a month later they fired you, and it's. That's kind of happening. It's almost 2.0 up here in Toronto. It hasn't become official, but a lot of reports out there that Masai Ujiri, who you were familiar with your time in Denver, would be looking to make a coaching change. And his peers around the NBA, the coaches, just voted on it, and they announced that Dwayne Casey is their coach of the year. We believe the media will probably do the same thing next month. I mean, Can you believe it's happening again? I mean, do you see a similarity between your situation and that of Dwayne Casey here in Toronto?
Yeah, there is a similarity that the expectation of management success is not being met by the team and the coaching staff. And expectations and potential are two things that kill coaches. Players that have potential and don't reach the potential, it's the coach's fault. Teams that have high expectations and don't reach expectations, it's the coach's fault. And I think the similarity also would be that Dwayne has been there a long time. And there is, somewhat of a philosophy of a wearing out process of the coaching staff and the coach himself. And I don't think much of it makes a lot of sense. The one thing that I believe in that not many people in the NBA do is continuity. And I think if you look at baseball and you look at football and a little bit if you look at Popovich and you look at Spoelstra and Raleigh and Miami, continuity builds a foundation that's very difficult to shatter. But I think over the last 25 years, basketball has gone away from continuity and have gone to kind of the European mentality of if you're not successful, we got to move on.
With longtime NBA head coach George Karl. You also mentioned that your time in Denver, you guys went to the playoffs every year, and like 6 out of 9 years, you lost in the first round to the eventual NBA champion. And in the East, you know the way it's worked for the past 8 years, LeBron has just steamrolled everybody. He's been to the NBA Finals 7 years in a row, and I think he's going to an eighth. I mean, how do you coach against that? How defeated must you feel as a coach if you just can't beat one single player?
There's no question that the LeBron tractor will always be heavy on Toronto, and it'll be heavy on Dwayne Casey. It'll be heavy on Kyle Lowry, and it'll be heavy on DeRozan. It'll be heavy on all those guys. But in the end, LeBron is going to go down in history as one of the top two players ever to play the game. I mean, it's going to be Michael and LeBron, and what they've delivered to the game is amazing. And I think this year has even been more incredible. I mean, I kind of said this when Karl Malone and Stockton were in Salt Lake City when I was in Seattle with Peyton and Kemp, and I kept saying, well, they're getting older. They're getting old. they never got old.
Right.
they never got old. And LeBron is showing us he might never get old because, what he is losing in age, the deficiency to come with losing speed and maybe not being as quick, he's making up in his brain power and his basketball IQ is so incredibly off the charts and getting better almost every year. And, this year I think he separated himself. And I think one of the most incredible things in the NBA today is this guy has won the MVP in about, 5 years?
Right.
And if you took a poll you know, he's the best player by far in the NBA.
George, are you a LeBron guy or are you a Jordan guy?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I would pay money, which I wouldn't say about many people, to watch LeBron play basketball. And I would probably see Michael play basketball. But Michael, I give the edge to it, a very thin edge to, because he won championships. And he performed on that stage at such a great level. You know, six NBA finals, six NBA MVP finals, six titles. And, you know, LeBron's record just isn't that good. And if that's going to be the criteria of winning championships, it's Michael. And if it's not that, based on that, it's the best player, maybe the greatest player ever to play the game, based on skills and impact on the game, I think it's a toss-up.
How close do you think we are collectively as fans and media and people within the game to declaring this Golden State team as the greatest team ever put together?
It's the greatest shooting team ever put together, and it's probably the best offensive basketball team ever put together. I think this year is going to be a challenge to them to find a defense to win an NBA title. I think they'll do it. I'm a fan. But they've been very inconsistent at the defensive end of the court, and they're going to have to find their defensive identity in these next two rounds, and somewhere along, it'll probably happen in this round against Houston. They're going to have to find an identity of toughness and focus and demand that they have not shown on a consistent basis this year. I still have trouble giving them the greatest team ever, but, you know, that's the world we live in right now. I mean, I think the Chicago's team, because I'm probably more of a team guy than an individual guy, and, you know, Chicago didn't have the most talented teams, but they won championships because they played as a team. And Golden State plays as a team, you know, they've led the NBA in assists for many years, and they pass the ball beautifully. But I'm not sure if I want to give them the title of the greatest team ever. They might have the team of the greatest talented team ever, but maybe not the greatest team.
Do you find yourself from home coaching and in your mind, like, what you would do against these teams?
I would like that challenge. You know, I kind of talked to some of the coaches in some of these past series, and my son is a G League coach, and he coaches the South Bay Lakers, and he was in the playoffs this year. And, you know, I got to hang out with his team in all of his playoff games. And so my mind is always turning. I mean, when you watch a game, I usually watch games with two or three other coaches, some high school coaches or a college coach or an assistant coach. And, you know, we sit there and go, what's that all about, you know? And sometimes I think it would just be, I mean, playoff basketball is fantastic. I mean, it's marvelous watching great performances, watching good coaching, and watching how players react. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I was shocked that Philadelphia's immaturity showed as much as it did, because I thought then, you know, they're a very talented team, but their mental toughness, their maturity, their experience of playing at that stage and in that mode, you know, Boston was just ahead of him by far.
He is longtime NBA head coach and former NBA Coach of the Year, George Karl. Great catching up with you, George. Enjoy the final couple of rounds in the NBA playoffs. Thank you for doing this.
Well, start a campaign to save Dwayne. He deserves his job, man.
Yep, we agree with you on that. But you've been down this road before. You know the way it plays out. More often than
he's a great man. Remember, in Toronto, he's a great coach, but he's also a very great person.
Yep, he's been good to this show. So thank you for taking time. Thank you, George.
Okay, man. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
There's George Karl joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing a service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com.
I was just looking at his stats. He coached 1,999 games. He missed 2,000 by one game. I don't know if that is a big feat. Like, I'm sure it is. Like Rick Bowness, for example, the assistant coach in Tampa, coached his 2,000th pro game.
Yeah.
Massive feat.
Huge feat.
1999. Like, he's missing one game.
Just off. And you know that burns him, but...
But do you think that he gets the sign for a day game?
No, I don't think so. I mean, not as a coach and then gets to actually get into the record books with a win.
But it wasn't that long ago that he coached. Like, 15-16 for Sacramento. Like, it's not like he's been sitting on his couch for 10 years.
No, he might he might get another gig, but he just, you know, he said it. He likes retirement, but there are other times where he doesn't.
And he also said nobody wants to hire a 66-year-old man.
That's the way the world works, right? Like, guys, it turns over. Now we're talking about Jerry Stackhouse potentially being the next head coach somewhere. There's talk. A lot of the assistants are younger in the NBA. Yeah. I mean, Carl, for you to get to 2,000 games, he was a coach for a long, long time. Like, he was a mainstay in the NBA.
It's funny that
for a long time
he brought up Seattle. Like, I forgot Sean Kemp and
Gary Payton, and they couldn't win, but they were great teams.
I know.
And they would run into Jordan, or they'd run into Utah. Like he said, it would be, you know, Stockton and
Malone
in the West just kind of dummied people for years. And
I remember playing in the minors in Salt Lake City, and we played out of the same building that the Utah Jazz played. And, you know, we're an IHL team, so we're not an NHL team. But the Jazz would not allow us to walk by their dressing room. We had to walk. Our dressing room was beside theirs. We had to walk all the way around the building.
Just to big time
you guys?
They didn't
want to interact with us. It kind of made me sad. Like, I was.
Yeah, that's kind of
gutless. I'd be like lugging, because we would practice offsite. I'd be lugging my goalie gear, and I could see my dressing room, but I've got to walk all the way around because I can't walk by the precious Jazz's dressing room.
Right, because John Stockton is stretching.
Actually, John was nice, and so was Carl. Like, the individual players were cool, but I don't know if it was a rule.
It was like
or
a Lou Lamoriello kind of.
It kind of rattled me.
Yeah.
But
anyway, shout out to George Carl.
Yeah, I thought George Carl was great.
All right, so Game 7 tonight. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. We've got it for you. Bobby Mack in studio next. Overdrive delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. We're up on TSN 2. Don't forget to set your PVRs. If you can't watch it live, you can watch it later. We got Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider, in here, brought to you by Finance It. What's up, Bob?
Not much, boys. Game 7.
You amped up or what?
Yeah, it should be really good. Looking forward to it. And it, you know, night or two off from hockey, and it's good to get it back.
Well, we've been detailing, like, the statistics. If you didn't watch any of the games or know any of the scores, you'd look at this series, and someone would hand you a sheet, and you'd be like, wow, same amount of goals, same amount of shots, same amount of scoring opportunities, yet every game feels like a blowout.
Yeah,
like, how did we get to this point?
It's been the 1-2-1 game, and otherwise it's been higher scoring than some people thought, and not close in
right.
the final analysis. And you know, we were talking about it on SportsCenter earlier, Owen and I, on the panel. And I mean, if, you know, in 5 of the 6 games, if you score the first goal, you've won the game. In 4 of the 6 games, there's been no lead changes within the game. You score the first goal, get ahead,
over.
And in 4 of the 6 games, it's been game over. And not and outside of the 1-2-1 game in the series, it's been, you know, 4-0, 7-4, 6-2. So it's kind of bizarre. And both are good goalies, and both have let in some bad goals. Probably Rene more than Hellebuck.
Yeah.
It's been, hasn't been a home ice series. So I don't know what to expect for Game 7, to be perfectly honest.
Shouldn't the motivating factor here, and you can never, we just talked about it off air, you should never underestimate what Vegas is doing, but just the opportunity ahead. Wouldn't both of these teams look at what, and they're all great teams, Tampa's good, Washington,
yep.
but you got to think, man, get through this, and we got a real opportunity to lift that thing above our heads.
Yeah, although I think that's the last thing in the world you can do.
I know.
But I know what you're saying, if you dare to allow yourself to do that.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know. I heard Pierre LeBrun on his SportsCenter panel hit from Nashville, and he was talking that exact thing about how, wow, you know, just got to get by Vegas and you're in the Cup Final. And he thought that whoever wins this series is headed to the Cup Final. I'm not convinced of that. I think this Vegas thing is sort of...
You just don't go away.
Well, how can you, man?
It's beyond going away. They're really good.
Really good, and they've been really good. Mm. And so I don't even think you can do that. I think these two teams are real good teams. They've been the two best teams in the NHL over the regular season. But Vegas was real close. So was Tampa, for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, Tampa had a Tampa didn't even for much of the second half, they didn't have to give a damn.
No, they
that whole division was set in stone at like January.
I've complained a lot about the setup, the format, but when you think about it, Washington's left, Tampa's left.
Washington
all the conference.
If all the good teams are left, so how could I complain about
it? If Nashville wins tonight, all four division winners
are in the Final Four.
When's that happen?
And Washington quietly was sixth in the league. I think they were tied.
They just passed the Leafs.
Passed the Leafs
by like a point or something.
Yeah. But that's you're right. And Washington was the one that people were like, nah, you know, I thought they flew under the radar all.
They
year.
Did all year.
They still are
all year.
You know, people would consider them big underdogs against the Lakers.
I have them big underdogs.
I think they win that series.
Vegas does. Vegas has them as big underdogs.
Maybe I should bet $20 on...
Yes, you get plus odds on the Caps. There I mean, it kind of feels like destiny. They finally get there. You know, like they can't treat this like they've accomplished anything. Yeah, you beat Pittsburgh and you've been waiting to do it, but you're only through two rounds.
Yeah.
You know, like you've been expected to win a cup forever, not just beat Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
They can't just be satisfied with that. With being where they're at, right? In Washington, I wouldn't think.
No, I wouldn't think so either. Because the glow of finally beating Pittsburgh is going to wear off real fast if you get dusted by Tampa Bay.
Right, exactly.
In short order. So you better come to play. But I don't know. Tonight, I don't know what to expect. I think it's going to be a 2-1 game. That's what I think. But
we were talking about that earlier. Somebody scores midway through the second period, and then an empty netter or
careful
whatever.
Careful game, kind of. I think both teams are going to kind of just settle down.
Although
here.
Remember, we said that 2 weeks ago with the Boston Leafs series and Game Seven. We're like, they'll probably just ease
7-1.
Into it.
7-4.
Yeah,
exactly. 7-4 that one, both goalies were.
That was crazy, but I don't know. So well. And I don't know why I would say it's going to be a 2-1 game because, as we say, there's only been one in the series, and most of the games have at least, you know, 4-11 goals.
Yeah.
So I don't know where I get off thinking it's going to be 2-1, but for some reason I think we're going to see the best from Rene. We're going to see the best from Hellebuck. I think we're going to see the best from both teams, and I think the best from both teams is tightening it up. I think Winnipeg's got more of an extra offensive gear if it gets to be a shootout because they've got more lines that are delivering. That, you know, the Johansson, Forsberg, Arvidsson line is the only one that seems to be doing anything offensively for
Kyle
Nashville.
Turris has not done a lot at all.
Well, he's a lightning rod. He has 0 goals in 12 games, 3 assists.
Yeah. And Fiala, you know, they had a few chances last game. They were a little better. And Lavi said they were better in game 5, but they haven't been good. Fiala's been somewhat dangerous. He did have the winner in the double overtime in game 2.
What's the latest on our buddy John Ferguson Jr.? Like, it sounds like
who is pumping his name out?
Well, he's Don Sweeney admitted to the media today that he's had a couple of interviews, right? Like, Sweeney said it, so it's not like it's fake news.
Well, but so
Carolina didn't get it.
Carolina's closed.
And by the way, Carolina was a token. We got to interview somebody.
So Minnesota, I don't believe he's heavily in the mix in Minnesota. So
Toronto, then.
There you go.
Toronto's the next spot.
So I don't think so.
You're willing to put a guarantee on that he's not coming back?
We were talking the other day. Well, that's not happening. I'll interview on behalf of not bringing
him. How about the horse manure guarantee? Would you eat horse manure on the air if John Ferguson Jr. is hired back in Toronto? Okay.
Back in Toronto, I think that's a guarantee.
We were talking about Toronto, Bobby. If they were going to hire Kyle Dubas, wouldn't they have done that?
Perhaps, but I still think that's the logical choice for Brendan Shanahan. In Brendan Shanahan's world, I mean, not mine, not my choice. Not that I'm opposed to it, but it's just I think that's the guy that Brendan's going to hire. But you know, there's all sorts of rumors out there. I mean, when Ronnie Francis is sitting there and, you know, there's been stuff of just rumor stuff, and I stress rumor stuff on Twitter. Well, Shanahan's just waiting for Yzerman to finish up with the Tampa Bay Lightning this year, and, you know, he's a candidate, and you know, this guy or that guy. Listen, Brendan Shanahan's got a clean slate. He can do whatever he wants.
Steve Yzerman's under contract, isn't he?
Yeah, and I don't understand why Yzerman would want to come to Toronto per se. He's got a pretty sweet deal in Tampa. He's got a great owner in Vinnick, and he's got unfinished business there to try and win a cup. So, you know, I think from the get-go. It's more likely to be internal than external, but we couldn't rule out external, but a very small percentage. And if it's internal, it's either Dubas or it's Hunter. And I think Shanahan might be more predisposed to go Dubas than Hunter. But as I say, anything's possible and nothing's happened yet. So,
well, and people are talking that the Marlies are still playing and Dubas, that's pretty much his. Has that not been
but Dubas's? That makes no sense. Like, the Marlies are owned by the Maple Leafs. It's not like
that.
He's got to ask Sheldon Keefe for permission to hire Kyle Dubas.
I understand that, but I mean, didn't you get the sense that Dubas pretty much, I mean, I know his role was bigger, but he's been the guy in charge of the Marlies.
No, he's in charge of the Marlies. Right.
But that can continue if you announce him as the GM of the Leafs. It's not like he's not going to show up at the RICO. Yeah. Like, what does a GM do now anyway? Into the playoffs.
Gotta be...
Only Brendan knows, and Brendan isn't saying.
Yeah.
I guess. Speaking of the American Hockey League, you see that game last night? 5 overtimes?
Yeah, Alex Lyon made with 92
saves.
Yeah,
92 saves.
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Where was it?
The Bojangles Arena in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Gritty. That's where I think...
That's a great city, by the way, Charlotte.
It
My
is.
Son Mike got to play briefly in the American League there. It's a really nice city.
Charlotte.
At what point would you sign off at the NHL level overtime to go 4-on-4 or 3-on-3?
In terms of how many overtimes
before
you do it?
Like that, like...
Yeah,
I
remember when we used to get a lot of really long overtimes in the National Hockey League, because I thought it was almost my anecdotal memory of really long overtimes is they tend to ruin series. So it's great,
like, yeah, because you get a
double or a triple or a quad, and that night that you're doing it, you're up late and it's awesome, and you're like, oh, this is good, and of course there's ebb and flow and everything else. But afterwards, it's like the series is sometimes it's crap after that.
Right.
Both teams are so exhausted. Sometimes it's so deflating for the team that lost in like quadruple overtime. They're just like, nah,
forget it.
Their heart has been ripped out.
We had a triple overtime game 3 against the Red Wings.
Red Wings, I remember. Yeah.
Larionov scored in triple overtime, and I thought to myself, we're screwed. Whoever won that game was going to win the series.
Was it 1-1 at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like they were an older team, and I think that they would have been so deflated if they had lost that triple overtime.
Yeah.
And it's like, do we have enough mustard to come back? And they just went on to
kick
our asses.
So I was when the NHL, and if for whatever reason, it hasn't been a problem in the last number of years. But, you know, because you used to get, when we used to do the playoff games, sometimes you'd get the Dallas San Jose game that started at 10:30, and that went to like triple or quad,
right?
And you're like, it was like 3 or 4 in the morning.
Try doing That's Hockey Tonight after that at 3:45. Look alive, and you're trying to
game 1 of the first round.
Get going, like,
and it, you know, and again, you can argue it's exciting triple quads, but of those triples or quads, more than half of it is usually garbage hockey. It's usually between the blue lines and dump it in, chip it in. And you get flurries where it's like, well, great goal scoring chance. This is awesome. Then they come the other way. Great goal scoring chance. And it's the drama of knowing that this thing's gone so long now. And then all of a sudden it would settle into 10 or 12 minutes of nothing.
Yeah. Right.
And so I was somewhat enamored of that idea that you just threw out of you know what, after the first overtime, let's make it 4-on-4. After the second overtime, let's make it 3-on-3. Let's not play all night and all day. But then you get people who say, that's not the way Maurice Richard did it.
Right.
Yeah. You gotta stay with the tradition of the game, keeping in mind that basically every tradition of the game has gone out the window for the sake of modern game.
I would try it at the end.
We should all travel on trains too.
Yeah.
really
that's tradition.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's
helmets.
You could try things at the AHL level and see the temperature of it, but last night you get 5 overtimes. Like you say, it's probably going to ruin that series. I would have liked to see, you know, you hear about it. Okay, after 2 or whatever, you're going right to 3-on-3.
Yeah, I would say
1 overtime period, 3-on-3. Go ahead.
Well, I get it, but there are.
That'd be great for me.
Think about it, though, at the NHL level, like 1 overtime period, you can get through it. It's usually early in the second overtime that goal happens. So,
well, I'm sure there's statistics on it. Like, I'm sure that if you look it over, when goals generally happen, and
right, Was it Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, the Ron Tugnut? Wasn't that like, and Keith?
Well, Pat I left North Carolina. I was driving home. No, this was the Keith Primo.
Yeah, the Keith Primo goal on Ron Tugnut.
I left Greensboro, North Carolina at 7 o'clock. The game started. I had it on a radio station. The goal was scored when I was in Pittsburgh. That's how long that game was. That was I listened to the whole thing. I'm like, this overtime after overtime, I was getting into Pennsylvania around Pittsburgh. Goal, Primo, roofed it over Tugnut's arm.
You didn't stop in West Virginia for a cocktail or anything?
I've used to stop at a bunch of different places.
We are now.
Yeah, the Peeler joint.
You guys open?
We are now. Ghetto Blaster.
Hit the tunes. All right, Bob. Enjoy it tonight.
All right, boys.
There's Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, brought to you by Finance It. Add a payment plan to your tool belt and break down large price tags into easy, affordable payments with Finance It. Get your best bets brought to you by ProLine and Jays in action tonight in Game 7 tonight. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. You guys sold me on the under tonight in Nashville.
What's the...
It's 5.5.
Yeah.
I'll take the under.
3-2.
Yeah, something like that. 2-1, 3-2, 3-1.
Empty netter.
Goaltender clinic tonight. So I'll go the under. I'm going to go over the number in the Yankees-Sox game, and I'm fading Baltimore. You know how I roll. Although Kansas City's brutal, too, but... Throw down 20, you can score 95. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game.
It's amazing the waves in sports. Kansas City a couple years ago, back-to-back, was it back-to-back World Series? Now they're garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto Maple Leafs, worst team in the league. Top 10 team in the league. Now there's all kinds of waves. Blackhawks, three-time champs. You just got to wait for your time to come around. And what'd be frustrating is the teams that never get there. Yeah, they never get to experience the high. It's like,
They get to the mid-level and then back down. Or
well, look at the Bills. Okay,
yeah, there is an example. What about the Baltimore Orioles? When's the last time they went on a deep playoff run where you're just
They were a playoff team, you know, a couple of years here there. They were in that wild card game against the Jays when
I know, but at their fan base, like, when's the last time?
No, I know. It would have been the Ripken era. Like it was a while ago. But you look at the Bills. The Bills had not been in the playoffs since 1999. They had not been in the playoffs in the 21st century. They finally get in. They play Jacksonville and they lose 9-3 or whatever it was. And now they trade Taylor, who I'm not a big fan of, but he's at least a mediocre quarterback that can do something.
Yeah.
And now they bring in a kid like Josh Allen. I don't know if he's going to start. They don't have a quarterback. Like, I guess A.J. McCarron, but like, there's a good chance they're going to step back again or take a couple of steps back.
Yeah, it's like, what are you rebuilding from the rebuild?
Yeah.
The Oilers.
The CEO is the wife now.
Yeah, Kim Pegula is the president of the Sabres, the Bills, and whatever
else.
How does
she become the best available candidate? This is nothing to say that a woman can't be the president of a sports organization, but why did she become the top candidate?
They own the team. They don't have to do anything.
They can do whatever
they want.
Which, all this guy does is hire and fire people. Sorry, I'm not buying it.
Well, Pegula, his honeymoon in Buffalo has run out.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? People don't parade down the streets and say, get rid of the owner.
No, you
fire
can't.
The owner.
There's nothing you can do.
No, there's nothing. And you put up with his nonsense and deal with it.
He saved the Bills in Buffalo.
He's put a lot of money in. It's just you wish that he would put it into areas that would help improve the situation. He spent a lot of money on players that have not helped his organization, whether it's the Sabres or the Bills.
And by all accounts, like, he and his wife are involved in like the scouting process and stuff.
Too much.
Like the Josh Allen stuff, they were there to interview him. And it's like, why are you in the room to interview this guy? Like, that's going to happen with Rasmus Dahlin. Like, Dahlin will show up at the combine and the Pegulas will be right there being like, here, come with us.
Let's figure out what you're all about.
Yeah. It's like, why don't you leave that up to the people in charge? But it's their team.
We don't like him. We're going to pass on him. Could you imagine?
Austin Matthews was on the clock, I think he met with Lou and Channy and company, and they were like, we want to figure out about this kid. But you know who wasn't there, I don't think? Larry Tannenbaum.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, the owners, it's their money.
They're allowed to do whatever they want.
They can do whatever they want. But I'm just saying, in general, using Buffalo as an example, I don't think it's in their best interest, if you actually want everything to work out, for you to be in there asking questions and being involved in the scouting process when you have no history of scouting.
Right. Trust the people that you put in place.
That's why you hired them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
I think so.
Game 7 tonight.
You have a feel. You don't have a feeling other than low scoring?
I'm not even sure I have that great of a feeling about low scoring. I just went with it with my best bets because I'm committed to those. But I'd like to see Winnipeg, you know, like I would. I find them, I think they're a more interesting team. They're a more fun team for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see Winnipeg. They've had a lot of success in that building, like all year.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it's a coin flip. I said it yesterday. I said the same thing with the Leafs and the Bruins. You get to game 7 between two really good teams. It's impossible to make a call one way or way or another, like definitively, like 100%.
It's the ultimate coin flip. It's who has a big night, which goalie makes a save, which penalties are called,
Yep.
And I'm not buying into the experience thing. Like, what, so 5 years ago you played in a game 7, so you're going to have the exact same performance?
Well, you hope
you
not.
You just go out there and play.
Well, last year I don't believe Nashville played in a game 7.
No, they didn't.
They didn't, so, you know, I think there is more pressure on them because they're at home. I think there's more pressure on them because of where they were a year ago, where Winnipeg is just getting to the dance.
I never played in a game 7, and if I did, I wouldn't be thinking, man, that guy across the...
The Rick ice has from, played
yeah,
a lot
it's
of
it's like
them.
Scott Stevens, oh my God, what's he going to do in a game 7? He can do damage in a game 1, let alone a game 7.
Yep.
The thing that's positive, though, is... We're going to watch Game 7, we're going to analyze Game 7, and tomorrow at 4, we'll break it down.
We will be doing that. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. The game is on TSN 1050
yes.
tonight. Don't
Listen
forget about
it.
We're
that.
Doing the pregame.
You guys are up on SportsCenter and
yeah,
the whole
we're
nine
doing
yards.
All of that.
We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.